Wednesday, September 4th, 2013. And we do have a copy of the order of business this evening. It's up here on the second table back, if you would like a copy of the agenda. Just to let you know who is here from the advisory board tonight, we will each state our name.
Del Maliza.
Mary D. Potter.
Susan Cassidy.
Larry Easter.
Dennis Campbell. And site conversations, please try to keep those to a minimum to maintain a high quality recording, and questions will be restated for clarity. If I heard them correctly, we need something. Okay. So the first order of business is approval of minutes from our previous meeting, which was transcribed. And if you have a chance to review minutes, okay. Is there any questions about me? I have a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes on May 1st.
Okay, second?
Second.
Any discussion necessary? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
And joining us for our meeting that is being recorded, we have another board member, so I'll let her state her name so it'll be known that she was here as well.
Leanne Larson.
Thank you, Leanne. Is there any community input?
Hi, there is.
Hello.
My name is Trish McConaughey, and Mary wanted me to hand out a little bit of information about there has been a statewide class action lawsuit settlement that will overhaul Medicaid for youth with mental illness. So how this relates to people with developmental disabilities is if there are youth with that are duly diagnosed, this could have some impacts. Now, the settlement is resulting in system and policy changes in the mental health system. So I have a handout. I'm going to hand it out, and you can read it and ask somebody else if you have any questions. No. Let us know if you have questions. We'll do our best to get answers to those questions. We've got some people who seem to know quite a bit about mental health just downstairs from us. So that's it.
Thank you, Trish.
You're welcome.
Okay. So our first item under special orders is we are going to have some information about the C-Tran mobility program. Walt is on the agenda. He's not able to be with us tonight. So Veronica Marty is here to share some information with us. Thanks, Veronica. Would you like to just stand up here where you can be seen and heard? Thank you.
Hello, I'm Veronica Marty. I'm from C-Tran. I'm their new travel trainer. I've been with C-Tran for about 6-7 weeks now, I think. But I think I know most of you in the room, and for one reason or another, just met Dennis, or just saw Dennis a couple weeks ago in the capacity of travel training. So part of my job is just three main programs that we do to help keeping people safe on C-Tran, both fixed route and C-band, and mobility devices, as well as helping people learn how to use the fixed routes. And one of those programs is the wheelchair securement. We've got, I don't know if you've seen the blue straps that people have on their mobility devices. That, yep, we just put some on one of Dennis's manual wheelchair, right? Yep. But that's one thing that C-Tran offers is that we will come out and attach those. But one thing that we're also talking about to people is a WC-19 type bracket, which Dennis has on his. And there's special brackets that if, you know, when people are ordering a new mobility device, that they can request from the doctor and get a prescription to have those added. Those are probably the safest way for somebody to be to occupy a mobility device while in motion on a vehicle.
But if they don't have those, then the blue straps help quite a bit, both in safety and time and efficiency in getting secured on the bus and the C vans.
We're going to take your license away. I'll
pass these along. Another thing that we do is actual travel training on the fixed routes. And part of this is just helping people access fixed routes who may have some sort of a barrier to it at this point, but helping them get away from their dependency on CBAM. It helps them increase their independence, their way of being integrated into the community. They have a lot more access. Time-wise, they can be a lot more spontaneous in life. They don't have to, schedule everything 24 to 48 hours in advance. Friend calls and says, hey, let's go to a movie. We can help them learn how to get on that fixed route, get on us and get to the movies or get to the store because, they decided they wanted something else for dinner. Whatever it might be. So that's one thing you can call, and it's a one-on-one training. We go out and do trip planning. We go out and scout the route for the person, finding out whatever it is that's making it more difficult for them to get to the fixed route. We figure out if there's a way that we can overcome that and help the person. And like I said, we'll do that. We do that one-on-one. I'll go out, get on the bus with them until they learn the route. They're feeling comfortable with it. And then the other thing we have is it's a volunteer program. It's called the Travel Ambassadors. And this is for seniors and people with disabilities, helping other seniors and people with disabilities learning how to use the fixed route. They're kind of a mentor. So they might go out and do some presentations for seniors and people with disabilities, or they might look at some events and get some sign-up sheets and get people that want to go to the event, get on the fixed route system, go to the event, get them comfortable with the system in a kind of a fun way. Or if they're a little apprehensive and they just want somebody to go with them, kind of like a bus buddy, they can do that as well. So that's another thing that we're also looking for is some travel ambassadors. Do you have any questions? That's the main part of what we're doing, along with increasing our outreach and getting the word out of the things that we're doing. Like the travel training, we can help with folks who are now employed, need to figure out how to get to and from work. Maybe their job coaches are already a little overloaded with getting them on their first day and job coaching them. That's something that we can partner with and help them do the travel training piece of it once they get a job. Another part of it is training the trainer. We can go to agencies. We just had somebody from Employers Overload come to one of our classes, and they become a certified trainer. They get a badge, and it allows them to also ride the C-van or the fixed routes with an individual without having to pay.
Veronica, do the individual access travel training? What would be the routes to kind of gain a referral or to get gains?
I'll give you some of my card, and all they have to do is call me. Or they can always call the 695-0123, which is the main number, and they can always transfer them to my extension. So I'll pass up some of these. Any other questions?
Great. Are you working with the school district?
Yes, I am. Another thing we just did is I just had a class of, I think, in my representative, that was about 20 of them from Mountain View. All of the teachers and stuff from there came, and they all got their travel trainer certified, so they all had their badges. And then we also, they requested, we have our systems map that, it's about this big, that they requested a wall-sized one for their classroom so that they can go and it's easier for them to trace it and show. So we're in the process of developing that form and getting it printed. Of course, it's changing here September 15th because we're adding, I think it's five new lines.
and altering a couple others. So,
what are the changes?
The 37 is now going to become the 37 and the 38. So it's going to split at the ends. So where the main piece of it's going to be the same going down Mill Plain, that part of it's going to go out towards the Columbia Tech College, Clint College building, while the other part will go to Fisher Sliding where it goes now. 71 is going to come back, which was a more of a direct line. It just went from downtown Vancouver to Hazeldale, the 99th Street Transit. That's coming back. People seem to be pretty stoked about that one. I'll leave some of these brochures and some cards. Thank you, Veronica.
Thank you.
And next order of business, we have John Lund here to inform us about the Silver Technology Grant. Thanks, John, for coming.
Hi there, I'm John Lund for the record, and I'm a consultant for Clark County. Over the years, from time to time, what we do is attempt to raise resources and funds for Clark County to do special projects beyond the bounds of regular funding and millage, county property tax dollars. So, some of you will remember we, several years ago, received money from Murdoch to do special projects, personal agents and independent contractors, etc. This spring, we wrote a grant to the Silver Foundation. The Silver Foundation gives money both in Oregon and Washington. And there were three purposes for writing that grant. One was to build service capacity. Two was to improve partnerships, and we earmarked vendors and school districts and parents and GDA and DBR, etc. And the third was to focus more on increase in job opportunities for people with more significant disabilities. And that grant was funded for $50,000 and it began June 1st. It takes many forms, but I'll briefly describe to you what we're looking at right now. First is a special technology project, which will include, hopefully, all the vendors in Clark County. And it will be in partnership with the Vancouver School District to begin with. And the plan would be to raise additional funds over the next months to add new school districts, add additional school districts. And the reason that we selected Vancouver was because from a technological standpoint, they're putting technology in the hands of every one of their students. So they're basically there right now. And we have $50,000 sounds like a lot, but for the project that we're undertaking, it's just thus far a limited amount of money. The focus is to build assistive technology and information technology with the local school district and the vendor base. So there's involved a purchase of 11 iPads, for instance, which will go to the participating vendors, and there'll be 9 trainings and special applications to improve employment for people with more significant disabilities. There's another 3 trainings for the vendors only, and those 3 trainings will be in information technology, and we're being asked or required by one of our esteemed county coordinators to create a cohort that would be for just the vendors, the employment vendors in Clark County, so they could rely on each other as a resource and learn the cutting state-of-the-art technology around employment for people with more significant disabilities. There's additional money in that grant for individual coaching at the vendor level for both information technology, IT, and assistive technology, and there's additional training dollars available for additional purposes around IT, recording of meetings, video technology, etc. Is that enough? You got that? Is there any questions? The kickoff is was July 1, and we're planning the first training on November 1st. A letter goes out next week to all the vendors and explaining what it is and inviting the vendors to participate. And Grace Jewett from Vancouver School District is working on her end with the teachers. That do it?
Thank you, John. Next on the agenda is a transition services update. Darren, thank you.
So I'm Darren Seigel, local supervisor for the local DDA office. And Mary asked me to come and give an update on the transition student project and funding that we have available. Just a quick background piece with the new operating budget that came out in July. We were given the waiver funding to access waiver services for transition students for the current transition year and the next transition year. And we were able to, the way it works right now with clients trying to access employment services in DDA, you have to be on a waiver to gain that access. You have to have your job and be on a waiver. Well, the new difference with this, with the new funding that came to us with the new legislative budget, was that we were able to add them to the waiver, whether they have a job or not, because the focus was those transition students for the funding for them. So so we got all our ducks in a row lined up and have started working on contacting those transition students and their families, discussing the services, and looking to get them into employment services if they're interested. So as far as an update on how that's going, we've contacted almost every single family and client that is on the list, save for a few. Well, we've kind of got two lists, and I've obviously had a lot of constant communication with the county working on those lists. There's different components. We have clients that are in service right now, clients that aren't in any services, and then we have some clients that are already on a waiver, and we just need to take one last step and get them into service. So, and Chris is asking which list. We've kind of got two lists. One is the main list with all of them, and then there's this little side list of clients that aren't currently receiving any services, so we've got to do a little more digging to find those clients, check out to see if they're interested in employment services, and try and move them forward and onto a waiver and into services. So those ones that are what we call no paid services, aren't receiving service, those are the ones that we haven't made contact with, because our focus has been the ones that we have access to, have regular communication with, move them into service, and then we're going to really move into those other ones and see if we can get them into service as well. So so the approximately 30 clients that we've contacted are all the ones that are either on a waiver or currently receiving services.
It's the other 16 minus one or two would be 15 or 14, depending on how far you're getting down. I worry about them because they don't have very good information.
And they are not forgotten. You know, it's a project with what we have and the manpower to work on. So we're like, what can we move the most efficiently on and get things going on? So we'll focus on those ones that we already have regular communication with, the ones that we're already talking with, and gauge their interest and move forward with them if we can. So you know, we've been able to make contact with all of those clients. And we have many of them that are already in DVR or starting with DVR, so that was really good news, because they've already started one phase of their transition towards employment. And we'll continue to open up those waiver slots and get those clients onto the waiver. So.
Are these people that you're talking about, are they ones that have gotten out of high school, or turn 21, or are some of them still in school?
Some of them are in school, but the clients that we're able to access the funding for at this moment right now are the ones that are 21 and have graduated. So the criteria for accessing those funds and opening waiver slots for those clients to move into employment services will continue into the next graduate year as well. So we'll be working on them as they turn 21 and graduate as well.
So this is just the students that have turned 21 and are exiting?
Right now, yes. And as Dell was asking, as they turn 21 and graduate this next year, we'll also be moving forward with
that. So nobody from the past that's graduated and waiting for service?
There's a specific age range for our minimum bulletin that goes along with this process. September 1st, 1991 to August 31st, 1993. Okay. And if you're 21 and in that range right now, we can go ahead and move with you and work, move towards the possibility of limited services on another waiver. If you're not 21, we'll wait and get you. But yeah, if you're outside of that date range, then the funding does not pertain to those former students.
But if you go to DPR and get a job,
correct,
you still can come out with the process is okay. That's the entree for people.
The generalized process for any DDA client that like was a former student is if they go to DVR to get a job and come to us, we're going to get them into employment services. This, what we're talking about, this project is for specialized funding for these last, this most recent graduating year and the next one. Any questions?
So just clarity. So this means with this group of people that just finished school this year and then next year, that they will go on the waiver and they'll be eligible. Obviously, they can apply to DVR and get DVR services. But if they choose a vendor and then choose a vendor, they will also have a waiver and go like on our CMIS report. Is that correct? They'll be receiving both DDA services and DVR services.
Well, they may be open, they'll be open with both.
But will they be receiving both? I mean, as it is right, as it has been, the person would go to DVR, and then if they got a job, then they would go and get funding from the county.
Now you
want to
get to them first if you have to, the students.
We have the ability to open them up prior to DVR if we need to.
Yeah.
So that's part of it.
And still go to DVR.
Correct. We're still going to look for them to access DVR when and if they need to, for sure.
You might need to repeat that so that, I don't know if it picked up David from the bat.
I think it does.
Does it? Okay.
Yeah. Trudy said it's pretty good.
So people can come, if they're in the right age range, can come to DVD and DVR at the same time, and they will be opened in DVD with those right birth dates. It's still incumbent on folks who should, probably people who are in ready to go get a job, to go to DVR. We're not abandoning our relationship with DVR because we're directed to also go to DVR.
Just gives us more flexibility.
Right. Especially for those people who might have a little bit longer path to get the job. But it is for employment. It isn't for other day programs at this time.
Yeah,
it specifically says work.
That's correct.
Any other questions again? Thank you, Derek.
Thank you very much.
Okay. So our next agenda item is some discussion about, Wow. I'm so excited to be on the top. Darla. Darla Health is here from the Parent Coalition to talk about the Developmental Disabilities Performance Audits. Welcome, Darla.
Thank you. And we can have a discussion about it as well.
Okay.
So I think most of you have received the audits that came out. They were published on July 31st, and there was two audits that was done by the State Auditor's Office. One of them was primarily on supported living, and then the other one was on the overall DD system.
I made four copies. I emailed the audit to the board members. I have four copies if somebody is interested in light reading.
So basically, the advocates around the state concur with the audit findings and feel that it's a pretty good vision of what is actually happening on the ground level with DDA. And It covers everything from the fact that we have more institutional placement than what we are currently accessing, to the fact that we have such a large non-paid services caseload and how we need to address that caseload to bring that back down, and how we need to balance our system more. That's in this the main performance audit. We've met with Secretary Quigley, and we met with Governor Inslee around the audits to go over with him kind of our viewpoints on those things, and to really talk about the points that we brought out was that we really need to expand community crisis stabilization and community respite. Most families are not wanting to go to the RHCs for respite options. Some families do access that because that's some of the only options around the state, but that we're really needing to address that differently. There was a recommendation in there for a peer-to-peer network, and so we talked about the importance of that and how that is a low-cost, high-impact activity, whether that's met through people-first organizations around the state or parent-to-parent or parent coalition organizations. We talked about addressing the wait list, additional funding for additional case managers so that we can get to those lists quicker and get to those individuals on the non-paid services caseload faster. There was a proposal to consolidate the number of RHCs so that those individuals who are living there may be able to continue living in an RHC, but maybe we don't need four at this point in time. And then to fund an FTE to complete the background checklist. On the supported living audit, that bullet point's actually referring back to the supported living audit, which showed that there was some issues around background checks. And in meeting with Secretary Quigley and the governor's office, many things have already been put in place to try and address some of those background check issues. But as advocates on a state level, we need to make sure that it's just not something that's acceptable, that people who do not pass their background checks are allowed to continue to work in the system. So although there's already been quite a few things put in place, and we're hoping that those actions will address that, we need to follow up with that to make sure that that continues. And then there's some issues around payment systems that, again, we think was probably an oversight or a glitch in systems, but we need to make sure, because it was a fairly large glitch in the system, and we want to make sure that those funding is going where it is appropriately needed, especially when we have such a large non-paid services caseload. The other thing that we wanted to invest in was additional staff for investing and responding to the allegations of abuse and neglect. That actually came out of the earlier report from Disability Rights of Washington. I think it was in the fall that that came out. But we actually took that back to the governor and said, no, we really need to make sure that we have funding for enough investigators to be able to follow up on this, especially if we're having overpayments and individuals working that are not following on their background checks. Or failing on their background checks and are still working in our system. That is just not acceptable. I actually think the audit was pretty good. So it showed that 60% of all individuals are living at home with family members, and the individuals with the highest acuity behaviorally, highest acuity medically, and are all living in the community. And so it was interesting when we went and presented to the JLARC committee that they continued to ask how would we be able to handle these individuals in the community, when clearly the audit says that we are already doing that quite well, or we're doing that. We need some additional help and support, definitely. Questions?
There's a question in the back.
What was the current conversation, if any, about moving counties to performance-based contracts?
So that was one of the, along with that, there was policy changes, as well as internal administration changes that needed to take place. And the conversation about going to an outcome-based contract did come up for counties. Whether or not DDA chooses to take that and move forward with it, obviously it's up to them. But the conversation was really at kind of the 50 or 60,000 foot level, in that we all need to sit down and have that conversation and what those would look like if we could move our system toward that direction. Where I think for those of us that work in the employment field and are much more familiar with it, we think about it on the ground level and what does that actually mean, and what would that those contracts look like, and what would those performance measures be at, and all of those things. And I think we have a much more greater level of detail than the individuals who are throwing that out for discussion.
Well, I think the state auditor suggested bonuses to move people towards supported employment or something like that, and that wasn't acceptable mm-hmm. to the advocates. And I'm not quite sure how we've managed that, and we don't have much, we have no segregated service. It's not like moving a county that has a lot of sheltered work. And I have to say that thanks to our vendors, there was our whole system working together. They mentioned Clark County as a nice place and said families, whoever they interviewed here, I don't know who they were, but thank you. Because they interviewed families who were happy with their services in Clark, not quite so in some of the other locations.
Right. They actually used us as the high water mark for achieving goals around the state, and then, but there are definitely are some counties that are struggling to be able to reach what needs to be reached. So, and what I've been told in many of those meetings is if all counties performed like Clark County did, we wouldn't have issues.
We have our issues too.
Yeah. Other questions? We are hoping that we being the community advocates around the state are hoping that the majority of the advocacy groups will look at this one as they're preparing their legislative agendas, because there is some excellent information in here that was found by the state auditor. So it's really taking their information to them and saying, wow, this is really what we need to do, exactly what you said. And so I would just put that out to you guys as you look at doing your legislative agendas for this next year, that this would be the place that you look first, because it really has some excellent pieces of information and data on.
That was a beautiful segue, Darrell. Thank you. The next agenda item. The 2014 legislative agenda. But you already knew that, didn't you?
And this is last year's agenda, and so it's a place for you all to start.
Did you get one there?
Yeah, they got some.
Okay, everybody has
some.
Send it out.
At the bottom, is that?
No,
no, no. That was a talking point reminder to me at the beginning.
So, what you have is definitely says draft across, and this is what the conversation was about last year. As you're maybe aware, in the last 3 years, as a board, we've moved away from trying to consolidate all of our local representatives in one place, and we've been meeting with them individually, and found that they seem to hear what we're saying a little bit better, a little more intimate setting, and can ask more individual questions without risking, I don't know, looking like you don't even know what's going on. Anyway, so in broad strokes, our two agenda items for last year focused around employment, which was maintaining and supporting people of employment age, as well as supporting, yeah, I was talking about, the students who are in transition. Those kids that are exiting some of the education, moving into the world of work. So that was one of our agenda items. Our second was to continue to implement what was recommended by all the research that was done into the closure of the RHCs. And so continuing to consolidate those, strengthen the community supports for those folks transitioning out of those settings, and maybe having some sort of short-term centers for excellence for those needs as they arise. And so this year, and also keeping in mind that we've tried to limit the kind of the big bullet points to two or maybe three at the most that we're presenting. There's a lot of things we get asked for the legislature, but keep it at a minimum, and maybe you'll hopefully get what you ask for.
And this meeting is not to decide on it. This meeting is for you all to think about it, and we will be deciding in November if the November meeting, you can vote on an agenda. So we, you can either list it tonight, what you are interested in, or take this home and think about it. I mean, yeah, I guess. Did you want to say anything, Charlie? Yeah. You have a look on your face as if you're having a huge thought.
I'm fine, thank you.
When will the Parent Coalition's agenda be?
Sooner rather than later. Okay. So I would just encourage you that you work on it as quickly as possible.
Yes. Just a question.
Uh-huh.
Does anybody know
Not off the top of my head, but we could get, I mean, they do projection every once in a while.
For the next, for the supplemental budget, there's already a dollar amount that's been identified that we can probably increase services to. So it's definitely an increase, not a cut. At least that's the way it looks at this particular point in time. That's specific to DD. As far as the overall state, I'm not sure.
I just think that we need, and we keep this up to their reminders, is that we need to continue with that, those transition students, because I come back to that, we've spent all this money on public education, and if you're not going to follow that up, it's not good use of those dollars. So I really think that somehow that needs to be woven in here. As one thing I'll throw out there.
Well, I definitely think that employment needs to stay a priority for our conversations with our representatives, because that's what's expected of our community, that's our policy. Something that we have included in the past is early intervention, support for early intervention, because just like Meredith was saying, we spend all this time in public education preparing these students to launch into a life in the community that would hopefully include employment, but you know, a lot of research also shows that early intervention is where you get a big bang for your buck. And so I don't know if we want to change our priorities a little bit and then maybe minimize the RHCs. I know we continue to have in there too, but maybe make that more of a, not as high of a priority as
early intervention is an entitlement now.
Yeah.
The thing that's popping up in early intervention it isn't money for it, because school districts are mandated, but right now the Department of Early Learning is mandating lead agencies to collect deductibles and co-pays from insurance, and we have some concern that people who are lower income or strapped themselves may not be able to afford to pay their co-pay and deductible, and I'm not sure what the answer is going to be. So that's a concern, how that policy is a concern. And I don't know how much it's going to garner votes by collecting. I don't know that they've studied that.
Versus how much it's going to keep people from accessing.
Yes. Which will cost the school district then more money later on. So it's like
pay me, that'll pay me later.
Right. It's gonna be a payment. Do you take care of it now and then lower costs when school? Because that's what was happening in Clark County. And I won't take from Kristen's thunder, but one of the things that was happening is there were a lot of people not whose children weren't being found at 5 and 6 and later, so it wasn't working as seamlessly as it should have. That would be the main early intervention issue right now.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that Darla mentioned in the performance audit was community respite option resources. And I think as a general issue, I think it's one that can't be stressed enough, because like Darla again said, in the performance audit, when we've got at least 60% of our clientele and individuals in homes in the community, then they're going to need those breaks to maintain them in the community. So I know it's something I see come up time and time again.
Do we want to continue to have some conversation? My looking ahead, I'm looking into my crystal ball. In October, next month, we will be having our big community event celebration and awards. And so we will not be meeting as a group. And so our next meeting will be our November meeting. But we will need to come up with some sort of new agreement. So do we want to continue the conversation here, or kind of mull it over and pull our thoughts together in November? Team? It sounds like it would maybe be helpful for us to kind of explore the audit.
Yeah. A little bit. That sounds like haphazard to me.
I know, it does to me also. But it sounds like it might do us well to use some of the state's auditor's recommendations to convince the state that would be a really good thing to do. Mm-hmm.
But what mechanism are we going to use to filter all that out and decide?
Well, that's...
That's what you're asking.
That's what I'm asking. When are we going to get our collective souls together again? Unless we do want to meet in October as well as having that, because the event is the second Wednesday in October, so we've all got the first Wednesday locked down already.
Yeah.
Maybe we want to invite our friend down from up north and we can have a conversation.
I think that would be a good idea.
Yeah, you
can
too.
Yeah. Can I make any decisions at that?
No. But we can mine through our resources, our information, and our documents, and come up with a real succinct proposal for our November meeting. Dennis, does that sound like a good idea? Is that a head nod yes, or I don't know? You're not. Cannot confirm or deny that you'll be there.
Talk to your travel training friend.
Yeah. So that sounds like it would be a good idea. So let's not continue to have the conversation now, but plan to meet first week in October.
Yeah. I will also send, do you have a later draft, Darla, of the Quigley thing? Could I get a later? I have the first one. So.
Yeah, I have draft too.
Okay,
so if you want to go to the front.
Yes. So I will send you what the advocate recommended, which kind of is what their thoughts have been on the audit. And then I think of the two audits, one of them is about residential. So I focus on the one that isn't about residential. I focus on the more general one. And the one on residential services, if you want, I mean, by all means, read it for your edification, but we may not want to make that the main thing.
Would you send all this stuff out in the main package?
I will.
Okay.
The one email with maybe three or four attachments.
I will do that. Did everybody
who said their attachments?
Well, yeah, but I'll do it again.
Did you send it with, I thought you sent it, I just saw it today. I just got back from vacation, so I have a gazillion emails. But I thought I saw it was like, click here. Was it a link to the report?
Yes.
Okay, if you could send out just...
I can.
Because I can't, for some reason, my DSHS computer, I can't get the links.
No, I can. You have a DSHS computer and you can't get to links in the States? That's really good.
But I have a prosecutor.
Okay.
Different unit of them.
Apparently the prosecutor doesn't want to talk to the auditor. Yes, I will send everything out in Darla's and...
And anybody else on in here who wants me to do to send that out, just put a star after your name, and I'll shoot for you to send it up.
Sign in.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the next item on our agenda is an early intervention update from Kristen Wade.
Clark County Developmental Disabilities Program. So in follow-up to a little bit of Mary's information at the May 1st meeting, she was talking about how the state was asking for requests for qualifications for the local lead agency here, well, statewide. And it came to our knowledge just before the May meeting that our current local lead agency was not going to be applying for the position to continue, and that our Educational Service District 112, ESD 112, did apply. So the update is that effective July 1, ESD 112 is now the new local lead agency for early intervention. And they are, one of the things that I wanted to mention that ties in well with what Mary was saying a second ago is that they are revitalizing their efforts in child find efforts, because that is a topic that comes up fairly frequently. There is data that is older that says that the state plan identifies that there should be around 2.8% of children in need of early intervention services, but yet we're only accessing around 1.8 or 1.6, so we're shy of that. There are subcommittees of the Clark County Interagency Coordinating Council, one being the Child Find Committee, and we just recently had our first meeting under the new local lead agency. And I think they have some really great ideas as far as how to start finding more kiddos. The local lead agency is changing the way that they are going to be interfacing their services, what they call the family resource coordinator. They will have three in-house liaisons, but then each agency is going to have their own FRCs or family resource coordinators as well, which they hope will allow more of a seamless feeling for the families for services. So that is pretty much the updates. I do just preliminary numbers. It was just shared with me this morning that referrals was already up in the month of July. How they managed that in a transition month, I don't know. But it went from typically kind of being around in the 20-23 range to 37 in July. So could just be a coincidence, but we'll hope that that's a positive, or look towards the positive of change.
Kristen?
Yeah.
I have a little bit of a fuzzy here.
Okay.
Can you tie the Educational Service District and the two agencies that we contract with, Clark College and Innovative Services, together somehow for me?
How to tie them together?
What's the relationship?
So the Educational Service District, in the role of the local lead agency, they are the first line of communication to families. They're who the referrals for families, where those families are referred to. And then they receive that call and do an evaluation or assessment for determining whether or not they would qualify for early intervention services. And then they will do a agency choice meeting with them, and then they'll choose to go to one of those providers to then receive service. Now, ESD 112 is also a provider. So they're one of the three agencies that we contract with to provide the early intervention services, but they're completely separate sections of that agency that do those two different pieces. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that helps.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
How is that not a conflict?
Can you repeat that question?
The question is, how is that not a conflict? And it is, it's definitely something that I won't deny that we haven't thought about. I think that it is viewed as not a conflict because it is completely different. ESD 112 is a very large organization, and it is completely different. I think when Mary was talking in May, I don't remember, somebody likened it to the idea of going to the mall, and you know, there's this store over here and this store over there, and they're not managed by the same people as far as how that works. But we are, what to answer that, we are watching the referral numbers because the agencies would like for that information to be watched.
And in birth to three services, I hope you don't mind if I
No, please do.
In our adult services, we have a real value on choice, and that the customer has the choice to figure out who's going to be the best match for them so far as an employment agency goes. In the birth to three world, I think that it's not as much of a priority, so that, you know, I've heard direction come down that, you know, just, you know, do your assessment as an FRC, get them to go into an agency that you think is going to be a good fit for them. And it's not exactly apples to apples when we're considering choice, I think, in that system.
It is a conversation that I had with the new DSD vice superintendent, however, when she let me know that they had been asked to apply. We talked about how are you going to keep this from being a conflict, because she knows our community is concerned about that. But all of the organizations were in favor of the change. And one of the reasons was length of processing things, child fines has been, we're one of the lowest in the state for finding the kids.
So does the family still get the opportunity once they're eligible to then go to the three agencies?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that's part of the provider choice efforts that they do.
And we'll meet with the ESD. She meets regularly because she's the chair of the local interagency coordinating council now. I will meet regularly with Mary Mertz, and we'll talk about it every once in a while and look at the numbers. We're watching the numbers to see where people are going. And so if everybody's going one place, and we'll probably eventually be reporting it to the board or something so that the community knows that it's either working or there's something not working there. Does that help?
Yeah, I'm just concerned that we maintain as many resources as we can. And it gets lopsided that everything's going to one agency and another one collapses because they don't have the numbers.
And that concern is shared in the community and definitely something that is on my radar and others' radars to watch and make sure that we keep an eye on that. But so far,
I think the only one that wants the self-limit is Clark.
They are hoping to grow, but yes, they do have limitations.
Right, they have more limits. Yes, you know, innovative, okay, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Thank you.
Is there any new business?
Yes.
October event.
Oh,
all right.
On October 7th at 7 p.m. at City Council Chambers, anyone who can be there for the proclamation that the city is doing, especially any board members that might want to receive the proclamation, are invited to attend.
So is Ted not here?
I think we should be an excellent choice.
Are you volunteering, Tim?
Scott and Walt.
You said Monday, October 7th, right?
Yes.
Okay. And if it's not until 7th, I should be able to go. I visit
the hospital to find therapy dogs on the but I usually come by 5:30.
Bring my dog.
Well, bring Aubrey. Okay, I'll take Pam to the hospital and then take Aubrey for the
date and time again.
October. This is gonna all come at you at once. October 7th, 7 p.m. City Council Chambers. So that's next to the Hill, kind of.
The old Colombian office.
You got that?
Mm-hmm.
New opportunity. October 8th, 9:45 a.m. I don't think you can make that. 9:45 a.m. The commissioners are having the proclamation read. So anybody that can attend or wants to receive the proclamation or whatever, come on down at 9:45 in the Board of County Commissioners' offices, or hearing room.
6th floor of PSC.
6th floor Public Services Building. And then the event is October 9th, so it's just a busy week, right? October 9th at 4 p.m. at the Hilton. And these are for these invitations here, or flyers, are for any of the board members that want to hand them out at all. So, why don't we just pass them down and pass them back, and then any leftovers go to David Hamwell. And we will be getting some more, but... And it's going to be great. Okay. Any other new business?
What is the final outcome on who the speaker is going to be?
I don't know. Because Jim Corey has made some contacts. It won't be Microsoft now. And they got rid of their CEO, so that would have something to do with it. And every time we ask them for something, there's turmoil. So we don't know it yet, and I will be the first to tell you if it's somebody. Well, I'm sure it'll be somebody exciting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it's really exciting, and we need to bring coffee, I'll tell you. Because we're on the list. Apparently, there's a speaker request list at Starbucks, so. We went right for Howard. But we'll see.
Okay. No other questions, new business? You guys did a great job. Thank you very much. I officially declare this meeting adjourned.